If you followed the Standing Rock protests in 2016, you have likely heard of Chase Iron Eyes, a lawyer, politician, and activist working on behalf of Native rights and environmental justice. In August, I had the opportunity to sit down with Chase at the Beloved Festival in Tidewater, Oregon, where he was leading a workshop on the spiritual basis of our current environmental crisis and green energy alternatives. A lifelong member of the Standing Rock Sioux tribe, Chase has a deep understanding of the interconnectedness of all things. Here he offers thoughtful suggestions for how we can all stay connected to the source and spirit of our food.
So I was born, you know, obviously Lakota. I was born as a Native American person. I lived on the reservation since birth. Mm-hmm. I was born in the Black Hills, but when I moved, when you grow up impoverished, deliberately impoverished, you don't recognize, where your food comes from, or you don't think about some of those things.
What were some of the foods that you grew up eating?
The United States government has been issuing these rations, or they just call them commodities now. They're not the kind of commodities that are traded on Wall Street, though.
But you don't mean gold?
Right. Yes. I don't mean any natural resource. So we've been eating probably the most unhealthy stuff that you could imagine. And that is why, like, for instance, our diabetes levels and rates are dangerously high.
It's like nutritional genocide.
That's exactly what it is. So at a young age, I started hunting. We would hunt, started with pheasants. Same thing with fish. We started to learn that. And then we moved up to deer, and we started to process our own deer. And it never clicked with me, because you treat those as kind of like specialty foods.
Mm-hmm.
But after...
And when you say those, you mean meat.
Yeah, meat. Mm-hmm. The only thing we harvested that was plant-based is timsila, which are turnips, mm-hmm. starch, and choke cherries and plums. For the people up here, it was the salmon, and the salmon and the cedar. These cedar trees, these giant cedar trees, those were communicating with these people and gifting them ways to be civilized, ways to participate, ways to make holy that interdependent relationship that human beings have with the natural universe, especially with their food. And so when we were separated from our food source or from having to partake in that relationship or even to recognize it, it furthered that abstraction of, of our spirit from our mind. Because our spirit is connected to everything, mm-hmm. it furthers that separation. I started to recognize that this happened to all of us.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we're all kind of participating in this destructive system, mm-hmm. the way that it is, and it's hard to break free from it. It's so hard to stop eating meat. It's so hard to stop eating products that are connected to meat.
Will you speak a little bit to that, because it's something that I've been kind of engaged in, is becoming vegan, which has been challenging from social and habitual and cultural and for so many reasons, and then also for health. I need the iron, so I'm interested to hear your perspective. Why is it hard to stop eating meat?
It's part of our culture. Mm-hmm. It's definitely, beef has been, we have been inculcated, we have been indoctrinated, mm-hmm. into, beef, it's what's for dinner. This multinational agribusiness is extremely destructive.
You mentioned a minute ago something about processing deer. I don't think that that's remotely the same thing as you're talking as processing beef.
We're talking, just subsistence hunting.
Mm-hmm.
Every year, for instance, it's hard for me to be a vegan because we partake of buffalo in a ceremonial way, and just every kill, it's kind of like kosher. Every kill is a ceremonial kill, but it's something that our bodies have evolved to kind of work very greatly with.
Mm-hmm.
We don't do well, Native people of this hemisphere don't do well with processed carbs. Corn is about the only exception. Potatoes too. I mean, we had carbs,
mm-hmm.
but sugar, wheat, we don't do very well with those at all. So to the extent that we can, we have to recreate these relationships with food.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, food is just eating, the act of eating. It's a monumental act that you're partaking in, transferring the energy of the sun that traveled to, a being that's older than you that somehow has the magic to take sun and water and earth and magically create food. Mm-hmm. And then you could take the energy there. It's a gift, really. And or you have to take it from something else that gets it from there. But we have to eat. We have to, you know, life feeds on life. And it's a very... That's a theme in a lot of mythology, a lot of stories around the world. But you have to, we have to recognize that relationship. Otherwise, we are less than civilized. You know what I mean? Like, we have to be on this trajectory of evolution, of social and spiritual evolution.
Do you think that word spiritual really comes to mind when you were just describing that relationship of the sun to the seed and the water and you know, all of the forces at play to grow every bit of vegetation, fruit or vegetable, which even feeds the cows, right. You know, that we're raising for beef. There's such a spiritual aspect to that, an elemental aspect to that that's so vital. And it doesn't, I think another part of us losing connection to our food sources is losing connection to spirit.
Yes. I think it's very clear that the more we are separated from our relationships with our food, with the land, with sacred sites, with water, the less civilized we become, and the more we recognize those relationships or conduct ceremonies that remember those relationships or strengthen those relationships, the more evolved that we are continuing to become. Mm-hmm. And it's hard. It's hard in the modern economy, in the 21st century, in 2017, to be connected to your food source at all. For me, it's only times of, I don't hunt anymore because there's a lot of work involved with it. Mm-hmm. But my cousins hunt, they all hunt. And so I have to trade, you know, I trade my labor, my time for a currency that I then have to trade to them for this sustenance. Mm-hmm. That should be a human right. We should have the right to obtain this natural sustenance from Mother Earth according to our own labor. Now, maybe that's not practicable anymore with, you know, 7 billion people on the planet. But we have to figure something out. I mean, the whole planet's going to evolve toward vegetarianism or veganism, whether we want to or not. I mean, that's just how it's going to go down. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I can see that.
So what would you recommend for, like, you know, a lot of our readers of, you know, of Eat Like a Yogi, or listeners in this case, are people who have, you know, their householders, they're home with children, they're, you know, trying to fit yoga into their day, their yoga practice into their day, but also Eat Like a Yogi is really striving to help people take yoga from their yoga mat and to live those principles in their life in every way, from what they eat to how they regard the earth, how they care for the earth, how they relate to one another and care for each other, how they serve their community. So what would you say, or what ideas do you have about how people can, you know, become more aware and reunited with spirit and living with a connection to their land and with a respect to where their food comes from?
One thing we have to, it is imperative that we do, is unplug as much as we can and seek these connections with the earth and the waters. There are sacred sites all around us here in this hemisphere. It's just that the people that know where they're at, you know, they might not even be going to them, or they might not be wanting to share where those things are. And so people who are here, Americans, who are also descended from these traditions of the ways of Mother Earth, we have to connect with wherever we're at. And if that means just taking hikes to a source of water, that's one very powerful thing that we can do. Creating a relationship with our food source, or buying local, growing local, doing as much of that locally as you can. Connecting with the stars, going to places where you can see the stars, going to the ocean. These are all very practical things that I do. I've got to go hiking, I've got to go running, I've got to go to places where I can hear silence, and you can hear yourself. But just finding ways to connect with it, really to sometimes getting up with the sun, sometimes watching a sunset, sometimes just paying attention to any birds in your area, anything that's here before human beings were here, even here before the Indians were here, you know what I'm saying? Like, things that we get our way of life from, because they're older than us too, you know?
Rocks.
Yes, rocks. Oh my goodness.
They're so ordinary, but they're timeless.
That spirit that sacrificed itself after it gave up all its power, it became the rock. And it's still very integral in our cosmovision. So there's power in rock, and that's why we put rocks on fire and make them red hot and reunite it with its blood when we pour water on the rocks.
Wow.
And that noise, you know how like Aum is kind of a universal sound that whatever traditions that might come from, they say that that was the first universal sound. Probably in those, you know, eons ago. It's the same way with us for like the sounds of when we pour water on steaming rocks. That's the sound that Ia makes now. You know what I mean? Like we recognize it all, and we stay connected to it all. But people who live in the city, who are working 50 hours a week, people who might commute on public transportation, or your time is very, very precious. It's very limited. So I understand why yoga or seeking that liberation through the yogic traditions, those are extremely important to human beings right now. And like I approach all of those ways with respect, because I know what they represent. I know where they come from, and you know, they're evolving. They're evolving all over the world. So if that's what you have and what you're dealing with, then you have to try to be aware, try to be perceptive when you see things. Like, look up. You know what I mean? Like, one of our stories is don't always walk around with your head looking down. If you're walking through a forest, don't always look down. You have to look up, because you have to see if you're walking in the shadow. You have to see where the light's at, so you can step into the light, because the light is warm. The light is liberating. It's enlightening. You know, just these simple stories from walking in the forest. You have to always try to be open. And it's hard to do that in the modern economy. I mean, some people only have time. That's why I know people cherish their time when they come here, like to the Beloved Fest. Or the Eclipse isn't a regular one, but if they go to Bhakti or Burning Man, or even any number of smaller ones, or just take their family camping, like see what that's like. See how hard it is to leave your smart device, you know, where you're not going to be able to access it. You're going to have to go old school for a bit. You know what I mean? See what it's like to pack your food in.
Get uncomfortable.
It's uncomfortable. There's no refrigeration. There's no internet. When it rains, if you don't have proper gear, you're going to get wet.
But it's like you said the phrase earlier, something about work without meaning.
Yes.
And it really does put meaning to your work, which is so vital, to be connected to it.
And that's why if you can do something you love, then you understand the meaning in labor. But a lot of people aren't doing, you know, something that they love. It's not an option sometimes. You have to trade the precious time, energy, and labor that is your gift. We are forced to trade. We are forced to participate in that system and participate in our own destruction, kind of. You know what I mean? Like with the carbon extractive economy, the big financial industrial complex. That's to say nothing of the military industrial complex, private prison industrial complex. It's all like getting away from us. So whatever source, the little bit of humanity that you know you have and that you recognize it throughout your day. Like that's when you have to try to connect. You can meditate anywhere. You can pray anywhere. You can recognize the song of a bird anywhere. You can recognize a hawk. Just any little thing that takes you there in that moment of recognition, perception, and spiritual cognition, that what now you're connecting, you're transcending, you're becoming one.
Many thanks to Chase Iron Eyes for sharing his time and insight. For more information on how you can assist the Dakota Access Pipeline protesters who are still facing criminal charges, go to lakotalaw.com.